public on Substack have received documents from a whistleblower who was recruited to participate in the Cyber Threat Intelligence League, or CTIL, through cybersecurity meetings hosted by the Department of Homeland Security. These documents reveal how the U.S. government recruited a web of NGOs and private individuals to do what the government cannot lawfully do, censor and subvert the American people. Led by military contractor Sarah Jane Terp and Pablo Brewer of U.S. Special Operations, a primary objective was to replace words like propaganda and censorship with the term cognitive security in the ethos of the cybersecurity industry.
Cognitive security is the thing you want to have. You want to protect that cognitive layer. It's about pollution. Misinformation, disinformation is a form of pollution across the internet. And just because we're going to get comments about this, my position on this is clear, has always been clear. We don't want to remove people's voices. What we're trying to remove is artificial megaphones.
They wrote that the third pillar of the information environment should be the cognitive dimension, which is just another way of saying mind control.
You're not trying to get people to believe lies most of the time. Most of the time, you're trying to change their belief sets. And in fact, really, deeper than that, you're trying to change, to shift their internal narrative slightly, or at least use their internal narratives.
Brewer explained how this cognitive social engineering needs to be customized for Americans.
Different audiences are going to require different methods of delivery and different messages, and that's because they've got these pre-existing social and cognitive biases. So talk to the average Chinese citizen, they absolutely believe that the Great Firewall of China is not there for censorship. They believe that it's there because the People's Republic of China and the Chinese Communist Party want to protect their citizenry, and they absolutely believe that's a good thing. If the U.S. government tried to sell that narrative, we would absolutely lose our minds and say, no, this is a violation of our First Amendment rights. So the in-group and out-group messaging have to be often different.
Another term they used to justify their crimes against the American people is public-private partnership. To work around violating Americans' constitutional rights, private citizens did the dirty work under government supervision. Terp and Brewer openly admit that they are set up as a private NGO to censor American citizens for the U.S. military.
I wear two hats, and I mentioned the one hat is the director of the Donovan Group, the military director of the Donovan Group, which is that future studies and think tank. In my other hat, I'm what they call an innovation officer. I'm one of two innovation officers at SoftWorks, which is a completely unclassified 501c3 nonprofit that's funded by U.S. Special Operations Command. And that's so that we can get after non-traditional problems and non-traditional tactics and work with non-traditional partners.
They targeted people who were protesting the lockdowns and developed the DISARM framework, which was employed by the World Health Organization for countering anti-vaccination campaigns. They subvert social media companies, and they report website domains to registrars. To influence public opinion, they create fake accounts and infiltrate private groups. They train influencers to spread their messaging, and they pressure banks to cut off people's accounts. For more of this, go to Public on Substack, who will be pressing our elected officials with these documents. Greg Reese reporting.
All right, folks, that's the latest from Greg Reese. Sweeping plan for global censorship exposed. We covered that extensively yesterday on The War Room. We'll be getting into quite a bit of interesting things on today's edition of American Journal. We're going to start with the debate between Gavin Newsom and Ron DeSantis. I guess it's the best of the worst versus the worst of the best. To a guy who's not running for president, debating a guy who's not gonna win the presidency. What are we even doing here? I'll tell you what we're doing. Making fun of California. We'll be right back for your Daily Dispatch. Don't go anywhere, folks. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the American Journal. I am your host, Harrison Smith. Very happy to be back with you for this Friday edition. Very exciting to be back at home, it feels. We have a lot to cover today, lots of videos to show you, lots of stories to cover. We'll be taking your phone calls as well, of course. It's been fun hosting the War Room. The last couple of days, we've had some pretty good shows. We had a very powerful interview yesterday with Ashton Forbes about MH370, which I've dug even more into since our interview with him. And I don't know what to think about it, but I'll actually be going on with Ashton and Alex Jones later today at 1 p.m., so stay tuned for that. Let's begin today, as we do every day, with our daily dispatch. All right, folks, here it is, your daily dispatch for Friday, the 1st of December. My God, it's December 2023. Our top story, Israel knew Hamas's attack plan more than a year ago. This from the New York Times. Israeli officials obtained Hamas's battle plan for the October 7th terrorist attack more than a year before it happened, documents, emails, and interviews show. But Israeli military and intelligence officials dismissed the plan as aspirational, considering it too difficult for Hamas to carry out. With the approximately 40-page document, which the Israeli authorities codenamed Jericho Wall, outlined point by point exactly the kind of devastating invasion that led to the deaths of about 1,200 people. The translated document, which was reviewed by the New York Times, did not set a date for the attack, but described a methodical assault designed to overwhelm the fortifications around the Gaza Strip, take over Israeli cities, and storm key military bases, including a division headquarters. Hamas followed the blueprint with shocking precision. The document called for a barrage of rockets at the outset of the attack, drones to knock out the security cameras, and automated machine guns along the border, and gunmen to pour into Israel en masse on paragliders, on motorcycles, and on foot, all of which happened on October 7th. The plan also included details about the location and size of Israeli military forces, communication hubs, and other sensitive information, raising questions about how Hamas gathered its intelligence and whether there were leaks inside the Israeli security establishment. So, obviously, this adds just another wrinkle to the mystery around October 7th, how it could have possibly been carried out to such a devastating degree when you have the most highly advanced and ubiquitous military intelligence apparatus the world has ever seen inside Israel and specifically around Gaza. But it's just another piece of evidence that Israel knew more than it seemed at the time, because not only did they have this attack plan for a year before, but Egyptian intelligence knew it was coming. American intelligence knew it was coming. Israeli intelligence also had forewarning just before the attack. But I've been saying since the beginning, I think it's been a combination of willingness to allow this to happen, to have the excuse to carry out the long-desired ethnic cleansing of Gaza, but also that combined with, frankly and simply put, arrogance of the Israelis who, despite having a fully detailed plan of attack with clearly thought out and achievable objectives, thought there's no way they could do this. There's no way they could pull this off. Why? This doesn't seem that complicated. Take out the AI surveillance positions, knock a hole in a wall, go through it. What's so complicated about that? Well, I guess when you think of your enemies as human animals that, you know, can hardly speak or read, then you don't think they can pull off something like that. And then they do. And then you get to do, again, what you wanted to do anyway, which is to ethnically cleanse Gaza and take it into the wider Israeli state. Also in Israel, Israel and Hamas resume fighting after ceasefire expires. Airstrikes reported across Gaza and southern Israel as international mediators work to renew truce. Israel and Hamas have resumed fighting, ending a week-long truce in Gaza that international mediators had hoped to extend to an eighth day. Quote, Hamas violated the operational pause and, in addition, fired towards Israeli territory, the Israeli Defense Force said in a statement following warning sirens near Gaza. The IDF has resumed combat against the Hamas terrorist organization in the Gaza Strip. The resumption of hostilities on Friday shattered a fragile truce between the warring sides that allowed for the release of about 100 Israeli women and children and foreigners held hostage by Hamas and other Palestinian militant groups in exchange for about 240 Palestinian women and children freed from Israeli jails. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's office on Friday accused Hamas of failing to meet its commitment to release all the kidnapped women. The Israeli military said it was, quote, currently striking Hamas terror targets inside the Strip. Air raids and artillery strikes immediately reported in Gaza after the truce broke down. We'll talk a little bit more about this moving forward where this goes. Again, we are not anywhere near the end of this conflict. In fact, some reports show that Israel is planning a years-long campaign against Gaza that's only just now kicking off. And again, I think we are in an incredibly dangerous crossroads here. And as you may know, the military and civilian intelligence agency leadership of Israel and America met earlier this week to plot the continuation of hostilities. Meanwhile, Senator Rand Paul uses Heimlich maneuver to save fellow senator choking on lunch. Senator Rand Paul on Thursday used the Heimlich maneuver to save a fellow senator who choked on some food at a Senate lunch. Rand Paul, a physician, performed the Heimlich maneuver on Senator John Ernst of Iowa. Joni Ernst. Joni Ernst thanked Dr. Rand Paul and cracked a joke about woke Democrats. Can't help but choke on the woke policies Dems are forcing down our throats. Thanks, Dr. Rand Paul. Which is nice. No, that's good. I'm glad. I'm glad he saved her.
He went from getting his ribs cracked to cracking ribs.
Oh, look, he's a hero and a victim. Look, what do you call it when a senator chokes? A freebie. Just kidding. Oh, I'm just kidding. Kidding about that. No, I'm glad. I'm glad that politician survived. I don't even know who this person is. Ernst. Who knows? I just think, you know, frankly, it's shocking that our D.C. politicians are capable of doing things like eating food. You would think the complicated process of mastication would be beyond their kin, but sometimes they trip up. Sometimes simple bodily functions are too much even for the simplified brains of our politicians. Meanwhile, we have this. Five takeaways from the fiery DeSantis-Newsom debate on Fox. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis and California Governor Gavin Newsom went head-to-head in a Fox News debate on Thursday as the governors, one a current presidential contender and the other seen as a future White House prospect, clashed over their records and policy. It was hysterical nonsense. We'll show you some clips on the other side. But like I said, it's one guy who's pretending not to run for president versus a guy who's pretending to have a chance at the presidency. It was the best of the worst versus the worst of the best. And we'll talk about it on the other side. It was embarrassing of DeSantis because how do you debate the governor of California, the most collapsed and devastated state in our union, and not have just a resounding victory? Instead, it was like a bit of a stalemate, a bit of a tit for tat. Nobody really won. Least of all the American people. But in terms of why they would even do this debate, it makes sense for DeSantis, because what do you do when your candidate and his entire candidacy has just been a litany of embarrassing failures where you're constantly getting roasted by Trump supporters? Well, you debate the one guy that Trump supporters actually fear in a political sense, knowing that Gavin Newsom, Californian psycho Newsom, combines those golden attributes of being an idiotic socialist panderer and a fairly good looking white guy with a family. I mean, that's a devastating combination. So it makes sense why Ron DeSantis would want to do this, just to, if nothing else, just to get the Trump supporters to stop horrifically bashing him for an evening. It didn't work. We'll show you that on the other side. Finally, George Santos faces House expulsion vote a year of mounting allegations. Good riddance. This guy's annoying. Well, DeSantis and Newsom went head-to-head yesterday. Who lost? The American people. Who won? We did. We get to make fun of the whole dang thing. Poop maps, lifts in shoes, just ridiculous lies across the board. Really just incredible stuff. Not credible stuff. I think the best thing to come out of this It's clip number 17. This was posted by Trump on Truth Social, which is crazy. It's crazy. Trump still is posting things on Truth Social. Does he know he has a Twitter account? His Twitter account's been back for like a year at this point. Why isn't he dominating Twitter? It's an odd strategic choice. Sorry, I'm getting distracted by the compelling and awesome candidate. I'm supposed to be talking about these other guys. Sorry. Trump posted this video in response to last night's debate between Newsom and DeSantis. And again, I think this is a more valuable clip than just about anything else you'll hear. Let's watch.
All right, welcome back to Debates That Nobody Really Gives a Shit About. I'm your host, Sean Hannity, and tonight we have the governor of California, Gavin Newsom, and Florida's governor, Ron DeSantis. Let's begin. All right, first question. Have you ever betrayed the greatest president to ever live, President Donald J. Trump?
No.
What kind of question is that? What the hell?
Very simple question, but let's try the next one. Are you a short, insecure little man that likes to wear lifts inside your cowboy boots? Yes or no answer, please.
Nope.
You know what? My wife bought me those lifts, and I happen to like them, okay?
He's even using a stepping stool. I can see it from over here.
Governor, we clearly said no step stools. You either get off of it or you're leaving this stage right now.
Oh, that was pretty good. I thought that was pretty funny. Good stuff. All right, I guess we'll talk about what they actually said, what they actually talked about, and the nonsense they actually spread last night. I get why DeSantis did this. I get why you would want to at least momentarily have the Republican Party on your side. I mean, the American people on your side, the American Republican people. He's got the Republican Party firmly on his side. He's their agent, after all. But after one of the most embarrassing and failed presidential campaigns ever, that just continues to fail. It's like every time you think it's reached bottom, it just keeps going. Ron DeSantis was desperate for at least one evening where his fellow Republicans were mocking Gavin Newsom rather than him. And it should have been home run after home run. I mean, California, just the word California. I guess before it would summon pictures of like girls in bikinis and guys on surfboards and boardwalks and eating burritos and like working out, you know, in the sun. Now you hear the word California and you just picture Skid Row. You just picture fire, like wildfires and shoplifting and poop on the streets. This should have been the easiest victory. Well, the first and easiest victory the DeSantis campaign ever had. But whether he even won or not, nobody can really decide. People seeing this from different angles. And he did. He went after Newsom about appropriate things, just not in an appropriate or satisfactory way. But we'll start off with the best of the best from old DeSantis. Clip number 3, this was posted with the title, DeSantis just ended Newsom's political ambitions with this. Yeah, we'll see about that. Clip 3.
But let me just say something about parents' rights, because he says California respects parents' rights. This is rich. He's been telling a lot of whoppers tonight. This may be the biggest. In California, if you're a parent in Iowa or New Hampshire or South Carolina, your minor child can go to California without your knowledge or without your consent and get hormone therapy, puberty blockers, and a sex change operation, yeah, all without you knowing or consenting. How in the heck is that honoring parents' rights when you're bringing people from out of state to go around their parents' backs and getting life-altering surgeries? That is radical. That extreme. That is an assault on parents' rights.
You know what, Ron?
Not for you to decide. It's for the parents to decide.
You know what?
And the parents do not want their kids going to...
Yeah, he's right. I mean, you know, good point there, Ron. That is true. I guess to me, it's like I don't know. He's just the worst. I don't know. He's just not a good spokesperson for this. Ron DeSantis thrives when he's winning. And he wins a lot. We'll give him credit. And when he can go up and just go, we did this and we did this, it's good. But when he tries to get angry, when he's, you know, talking like this, his voice gets higher pitched the angrier he gets. He doesn't have any force of character.
He can't rally the troops.
Exactly. Yeah, he can't rally the troops. He's no Donald Trump. Let's just say that. I mean, the words he uses. Oh, California likes parents' rights. This is rich. This guy says so many whoppers. And it's like, what are you doing, man? They're taking children away from their parents to castrate them. If your child escapes to California, they will put them in the care of a LGBT adult who will guide their transition into sterility. I mean, there are so many ways to discuss this. Saying this is rich and that's a whopper, it's not sufficient. It's not enough. It's not intense enough to express what's actually going on here. And of course, Gavin Newsom says the only thing he can. These kids are just trying to live. They're just trying to live. There's a way to approach these things. There's a way to talk about these things that takes it out of the framework that the leftists have put things in. Even the way this is framed as honoring parents' rights. I don't know. It's not about honoring. It is about honoring parents' rights, but it's about stealing children from people. That's the thing. It's like, we want to honor parents' rights. No, we want the state not to kidnap and castrate your children. There's just a way to talk about this with the intensity that these topics deserve. Ron DeSantis, he just ain't got it. He just doesn't have it. And again, it's sad because everything when it comes to California is on the wrong track. And DeSantis should be just bashing Newsom over the head with these facts, with the absolute drain of population, with the absolute collapse of social order and safety. I mean, Gavin Newsom just had to activate the California Highway Patrol to be guards outside of stores in a desperate attempt to mitigate the shoplifting and stop the wholesale exodus from California of every retail store they have there. I mean, you're up there saying that he's telling whoppers. This guy's telling whoppers. This is rich. It's like, my God. Yes, talking about DeSantis versus Newsom. Not that it has any particular importance in terms of the political landscape. Nothing was decided by this, is what I mean. And it is interesting that DeSantis went up against Newsom. I guess it was just like a private agreement thing. I guess it's what it had to be because it's not like this is the front runner of the Republicans debating the front runner of the Democrats. It's the third, perhaps fourth place Republican debating the worst governor in America who is apparently not running for president, although he certainly is positioning himself as if he is. So let's just keep going to some of these clips and reviewing them, discussing them, and yes, mocking them. Let's go to clip number four now. DeSantis somehow loses an argument about Bidenomics. Let's watch.
Let me just say, like Biden is hollowing out this country.
I do have a follow-up question.
Ron, in California.
Ron, I'm happy that you continue to talk. Let's talk a little bit about Bidenomics because I'm happy to take that on right now as well. And I think it's
you're
a fair point.
You're a big
point.
Supporter of it. I appreciate you acknowledging
14
that.
14 million jobs, 10 times more than the last three Republican presidents combined.
Because he had
815,000 manufacturing
jobs. The jobs were because
3.9%,
of the COVID lockdowns. Are you kidding me?
3.9% unemployment. As he continues to talk over me, I'll talk to the American people. 3.9% unemployment, the lowest black unemployment in American history, the lowest unemployment for Hispanics in American history, the lowest unemployment for women in 70 years, the lowest black poverty rates in history. That's this administration's agenda. And by the way, as you smile and smirk over there, you should know this, the American people. Here's Here's a guy who celebrated Bidenomics just this week, celebrating $28 million that came into your state because of the CHIPS and Science Act, one of the most significant economic plans since FDR. I'm proud of the work Biden and Harris have done.
Would you like to respond?
You know, I don't know how you don't know what Democrats are going to say and just say it before they can. It seems so easy to me. I mean, you're doing your debate prep and you go, all right, on the topic of the economy, what are they going to say? Well, let's see. The Democrats say the same thing every time they're asked. They repeat the same talking points as the Biden White House every single time they're open their mouths. I mean, these people follow a script like robots. So how do you not come out just first and foremost going, we talk about Bidenomics, he's going to bring up the number of jobs created. Everybody knows that those jobs weren't created out of whole cloth. They were the same jobs that were eliminated during COVID that were simply allowed to return. That's not job creation. That's something else entirely. That's relaxing job destruction. You know, how do you not presuppose what these people are going to say? How do you not anticipate their talking points when they're the same talking points that they all use and have all used for the last several months? I mean, the term Bidenomics, the thing you do is you use the term Bidenomics to describe the dire straits the average American is in. We've covered it over and over from TikTok videos of like registered nurses who work 6 days a week crying because they can't afford to buy their kids new shoes. Like the American people are suffering and struggling from the economic situation. And so you point out to everybody watching, are you doing better? Are you feeling really good about the economy right now? The latest story from CBS News, not from some right wing, whatever. I mean, the mainstream media's stance now is that the average American, not household, average American is spending $11,000 or more a year on basic necessities. $11,000. Previously, the number, which was already shocking, was that the average American was spending $700 a month more. This is significantly more than $700. It's nearly $1,000 a month on basic necessities. It's an invisible tax. It's the diminution of the value of your very money. It doesn't matter how big. Did everybody here get a $12,000 raise this year? No? Well, then you lost $12,000. I mean, how you don't win on Bidenomics is again, just embarrassing. Just absolutely embarrassing. And I know there's like different ways of looking at this. There's like the logical, intelligent, smart way of looking at it where you see through the claims of job creation because you know exactly, like you remember 3 years ago. You actually have a memory that extends beyond the last TikTok video you watched, and you know that the economy was purposefully crushed, destroyed, eliminated. It was illegal to go to work. Like everybody knows this. Everybody remembers this. And then they just they lifted those restrictions the minute Biden got into office. I mean, how does that not piss people off, right? So everybody knows this. One way of looking at it is the clear-eyed, informed, long-view way of looking at it. Then there's the way that the average American audience member looks at it, which is, well, he created 14 million jobs. That's twice as much as every Republican president combined. It's receive talking point, regurgitate talking point. So you have to anticipate and cut off their chance to deploy the talking points. Ron DeSantis doesn't do that at all, even a little bit. I don't know. It's just DeSantis is just not – he's just not the guy. He's just not the guy. He did have a bit of a victory here, which was basically handed to him on a golden platter. Clip number 14. This is Ron DeSantis talking about a person he knows that moved from California to Florida because Florida is better governed. Let's watch.
So I was talking to a fella who had made the move from California to Florida, and he was telling me that Florida is much better governed, safer, better budget, lower taxes, all this stuff. And he's really happy with the quality of life. And then he paused and he said, and oh, by the way, I'm Gavin Newsom's father-in-law. So we do count Gavin's in-laws as some of the people that have fled California and come to the state of Florida. And why are we getting people to come? We have a 50-year low in the crime rate. You don't see, in the last 10 years, we've had a 45% decline in homelessness. California's had a 45% increase in homelessness. We back the blue. I was walking the streets of San Francisco a couple months ago, and I had some of the cops in San Francisco do a beeline to come over to me, and I didn't know what they were going to say. And they're like, we want to thank you for standing for law enforcement, because we don't get that support in the state of California. So people understand quality of life matters. They understand that Florida's doing it right. And I can tell you, the numbers speak for themselves. We have way more people moving to this state than leaving. Gavin can't say the opposite. More people are leaving California than are moving into California.
So that was pretty good. You know, it was like pretty good. It was like, all right. I was like, yeah, it's not bad. It's not good, but it wasn't bad. And again, I just, you know, the seriousness of all of these topics, like the fact that California is maybe the most blessed place in the world in terms of natural beauty and resources in the world. I mean, it's hard to come up with a place that is better situated for the prosperity and enjoyment of whoever lives there. And it's just been gutted and destroyed. But again, he doesn't have the punch. I mean, how would Trump have delivered that message? You know, he would have just said, like, people who leave in California, they're coming to Florida. They hate it there. It's dirty. It's gross. They're scared. Crime, terrible. They come to Florida. They're happy. Sunshine. Fun. And whatever Gavin Newsom says, well, there's a lot of people. It's like, well, what about your dad? What about your dad, Gavin? That's how you do it. Oh, you mean like your dad? Like, boom, you end it with that. That's got to be the explosive thing at the end, not like a middling line in the middle, the way that old DeSantis did it there. Which, again, I don't really care. I like DeSantis as a governor. I always have. But he's allowed his political ambitions to, oddly enough, destroy his political viability. I guess that's what happens when you value your own aggrandizement and ambition to the highest office over what's best for the country. But that's where I'm coming from, is what's best for this country. And when you have an event like this that are going to have eyes on it, that is going to be some sort of media event, and you fail to treat it with the appropriate sincerity and intenseness, and just fail, you're failing all of America, because we don't have much time. We can't just, you know, pussyfoot around what's going on. Let me show you a few more clips here of Newsom and DeSantis, and we'll move on to some other news. It's beginning. But I was just thinking about it, and it's sort of a crummy situation DeSantis is in, because obviously Donald Trump changed the entire political game, the entire political landscape. Like, no debate looks like they looked before Trump entered and just shattered the paradigm. And Ron DeSantis has to try to thread the line between being Trumpian in that aspect, keeping up with the times and you know, treating political debates as the all-out brawl that they've become, and trying to differentiate himself from Trump by being the respectable old school, like being a point of nostalgia for the boomers of, like, ah, yes, a statesman. So he kind of loses either. It's kind of a lose-lose situation for DeSantis, because he doesn't have the Trumpian energy. And when he tries to take the more politic stance, it doesn't work anymore. It doesn't work at all. So I say it's a lose-lose situation, but you also have nothing to lose. You're not going to be the presidential nominee. You're not going to win against Trump. You're not even winning against Vivek Ramaswamy, or even Nikki Haley, according to some polls. So why not just come out swinging? Why not just come out saying the most ridiculous, outrageous things to Gavin Newsom? Get headlines, make some points, keep Gavin Newsom smiling like a psychopath, grinning wider and wider as his, you know, points are destroyed piece by piece. But instead, he tries to take this, like, listen, you know, I was walking through San Francisco and cops came up to me and said, thank you, sir, for supporting us, because our government doesn't. And that hit me here. And it's like, ugh, ugh. Come out and say your city's covered in poop. Your city is covered in poop. Why is it covered in poop, Gavin? Or like the homeless thing. That's an amazing point, that Florida's homeless population has dropped 45%. That's massive. That's totally huge. It doesn't come across like that, though. I point out to everybody, as everybody knows by this point, Gavin Newsom, every 10 years, makes a pledge to eradicate homelessness, and 10 years later, it's exploded by like 900%. So just put that to him. Just go, hey, you know, here's a quote from you in 2005 saying we will eradicate homelessness in California in 5 years. Well, it's been 18. How's that going for you, Gavin? How's your plan working out? People trusted you with your plan. Did they get what you promised them? Did you fulfill your – what's the homeless situation now, Gavin? Tell me. Put it on him. Put him on the back foot. Instead, it's just these like talking points that are – delivered in sort of a flaccid way. I don't know, man. It's just, it's pathetic because the California syndrome is what's destroying this country from the inside. This rot, this failure, this locust style destruction where they just take a good thing like California, destroy it completely with their selfishness and their division, and then move on to the next place. That's what I would tell him if I was Ron DeSantis talking about the population exchange. I'd be like, Gavin, for the sake of Florida, you got to fix California. We can't handle all these people. We can't handle them. There's too many people coming from California. You need to fix your state so people don't have to run away. I mean, just, I don't know, man. It's like the number of things you can point to California as just embarrassingly failing on. It's innumerable. Why not point these things out and contrast it with the incredible wealth and manufacturing and production that they inherited? He didn't build any of that, right? Compare Gavin Newsom to, you know, some rich kid that inherited $10 million, has spent half of it, and still walks around bragging about being a millionaire. It's like, yeah, you inherited a really, you know, a lot of really great stuff. You have done nothing with it. You have destroyed and squandered that wealth. And you're still walking around like you're the king of Timbuktu. Like, it's embarrassing. You've got to frame people's image of Gavin Newsom because he's got a good image. Because he looks like he knows what's going on. He's got a very polished, you know, appearance. If he's not falling down the stairs or tackling Chinese children. It's, you know, other than that. And again, it's not that that should matter. It's not that that's how you choose. It's not that's how you should choose a presidential candidate. But that is how you choose a presidential candidate. It's image management that should be what Ron DeSantis is doing. Instead, he's doing the old Republican thing of here's some stats. Here's some stats I have for you. It doesn't compel anybody, and it has to be confronted, and we have to change our tactics because if we keep losing because of this, then America loses. You've got to win for the sake of America. Let's go now to – I guess we'll finish up with the follow-up to the last clip we played. Clip 15 is Gavin Newsom, for some reason, very bizarrely, questioning the stat that DeSantis just put out of more people moving from California to Florida than Florida to California. This is undeniable. For some reason, Gavin Newsom thinks that this isn't true. Very strange. Let's watch.
It didn't address the issue. Can you explain this migration out of California and going to red state, blue state.
Well, hold on. You mean the last 2 years, more Floridians going to California than Californians going to Florida?
No, I put up on the screen, by the way,
that's going to be fun to fact check. So we'll just start right there. California has no peers. California dominates. Size of 21 state populations combined. It's the fifth largest economy in the world. We dominate. Number one manufacturing state. We dominate.
And so, you know, obviously, to anybody that's watching this with a clear vision of what's going on, that was the loss from Newsom. But again, this is what they do, right? Hit them with something that hurts, and they pivot to something else. And I'd be very surprised if DeSantis didn't follow that tangent. But like I just said, I mean, you got to compare Newsom to like some rich kid that's bragging about how many cars he has when his dad bought all of them. You know, it's like, You achieved none of that. None of that is because of you. None of that's because of your policies. Frankly, it's a testament to how powerful California is that they remain so powerful and rich despite all of your policies, your endless contrivances to eradicate wealth and safety and comfort of your citizens. And you know, I guess this is the post-fact world. It is beyond doubt that more people have moved from California to Florida than from Florida to California. That's not debatable. That'll be fun to fact check. Why would that be fun for you to fact check? You're wrong. You're completely and utterly and devastatingly wrong about this. The actual numbers are this for the last 2 years. In 2022, 50,000 people moved from California to Florida, while 28,000 people moved in the opposite direction. In 2021, 37,000 people moved from California to Florida, while only 24,000 moved from Florida to California. And the same things happened in New York to a massive degree. But basically, Florida gained around 22,000 residents in the comparison. But that's just Florida. When it comes to the rest of the country, in 2022, hundreds of thousands of people moved to Florida, Texas, North Carolina, and other southern and western states. But some states, including California and New York, lost residents. About 319,000 people moved into Florida. California lost 343,000, leaving the state for other regions. So this is undeniable. The facts are on DeSantis' side here, which makes his failure to make the case that much more embarrassing. He did talk about the poop in San Francisco. Let's go to clip 16 here, where he brought up a map of San Francisco and the human feces that are found on the streets there.
This is a map of San Francisco. There's a lot of plots on that. You may be asking, what is that plotting? Well, this is an app where they plot the human feces that are found on the streets of San Francisco. And you see how almost the whole thing is covered, because that is what has happened in one of the previous greatest cities this country's ever had. Human feces is now a fact of life, except when a communist dictator comes to town. Then they cleaned up the streets. They lined the streets with Chinese flags. They didn't put American flags there. They cleaned everything up. So they're willing to do it for a communist dictator, but they're not willing to do it for their own
people. Yeah, that's a pretty good point. Not bad, not really bad. Again, maybe not as impactful as it should have been. But that's the sad thing about it, is that, I mean, it's like, what a dream. What a dream of a debate. To go into a debate with a guy who runs a state whose primary fame at this point is being literally covered in human feces. And you don't just, like, dominate. You don't just devastate him. Instead, you come out like, yeah, he did pretty well. Like, this is the fate of America. And soon we will all be covered in poop if we don't get this thing straightened out. All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Second hour of American Journal is on. A lot of other stuff to get into today. We'll continue with American politics here momentarily. We mentioned this at the end of the Daily Dispatch. I'm glad this is happening just because of a personal anecdote of mine. Story is this from Wall Street Journal. George Santos faces House expulsion vote after a year of mounting allegations. The House is set to vote on Friday on whether to expel embattled Representative George Santos over allegations in the New York Republican that the New York Republican stole money from his own campaign and committed other misdeeds what would be only the third expulsion from the chamber since the Civil War. The results remained unpredictable. Two-thirds House supermajority is required to remove a member, meaning that 290 votes would be needed to oust Santos if all 435 House members vote. Most Democrats are expected to back expulsion, leaving Santos's hopes in the hands of his GOP colleagues. While many Republicans support the move to remove Santos, some, including Speaker Mike Johnson, have expressed reservations about expelling him before his criminal case has been resolved. But I was talking to a family member, and basically the George Santos saga basically convinced them to not be Republicans anymore, because they aren't InfoWars, they aren't embroiled in this conflict all the time and seeking out the details. Mainstream media consumers, you could basically say. And to them, and to a lot of people, to me too, George Santos's just lies and stupidness, it just is, it destroys the one remaining shred of credibility that the Republicans have left, that they don't tolerate this kind of deception and manipulation. Everybody knows Democrats are liars. And yet, if you ask a lot of like boomer Republicans about why they support Republicans, they'll probably just say like, well, the Democrats are just full of it. They're just full of crap. They're just liars. So here you let this person who's been shown to be a liar over and over again sort of get away with it. And it sort of removes the one thing you had going for you, which is that you're not a bunch of liars. Well, now you got a big liar in your midst. So again, I don't agree with it necessarily because, and there's two ways of thinking about this. The other way of thinking about it is like, well, the Democrats succeed because they stand up for one another, even when the other side, you know, even when their colleagues are full of crap and being horrible, they stick together because they know that they have to stick together to win, and they just care about winning and achieving things politically, and that's what we should do. So I get why you would want to just keep George Santos on as just a screw you to the Democrats, like, but I think it's destroying credibility, and I think ousting him will have more positive benefits than negative. If nothing else, to differentiate, like, that's how Republicans should be treating this. They should be going, look, this is what we do. We're Republicans. We actually care about the truth. We actually care about having good people on our side. We actually care about we care first and foremost about the quality and the character of our representatives, not what's most politically expedient. So if you want people that'll lie and cheat and steal, you go to the Democrats. If you want people that are respectable and will stand up for values, come to the Republicans. And letting George Santos, who just, I mean, it's not just the lies about his identity and his accomplishments and his education. He's then taken money, and apparently the story is he spent like $400,000 on internet hookers. Like, get this guy out. Just, he's a distraction. He's a menace. He's a pimple on the face of the Republican Party. Just, he can go away now. He can go away. Really, he should resign. I would have respect for him if he was like, I tried a con and I got caught. See ya. But no, he's going to write a book. He's going to try to fight it. It's just like, you know, the fate of the world, the fate of our country, the fate of humanity, liberty itself is at stake. Can we not get tied up in personal squabbles about your own ego? For the sake of the country, please. Can we do that for once, please? For the love of God. I guess since we're talking politics, maybe we can get down to the foundation of the matter here. We talked extensively yesterday on the War Room about the YouTube files. That story's on InfoWars, published yesterday by Ben Warren. YouTube files, Biden White House dictated censorship demands under, quote, misinformation canard. Internal documents from Google, which owns YouTube, revealed that the Biden White House pressured the company to censor Americans spreading alleged misinformation related to COVID-19 and vaccinations, according to the House Judiciary Chairman, Representative Jim Jordan, who's holding a live hearing on social media censorship today. The revelation comes nearly 1 year after Elon Musk released the Twitter files via several journalists, which showed that the DOJ and White House had effectively captured Twitter, which frequently censored upon request. Then the Facebook files emerged, showing similar top-down Big Brother censorship, which led Facebook to change internal policies due to pressure from the Biden administration. And now YouTube, the document acquired through a source close to the House Judiciary Committee, revealed that the Biden White House sought to quash vaccine skeptics. And it was more than that. And this is a bigger deal than those others, in my opinion, because not only is YouTube like the primary video platform for the world, and it's where a lot of the world gets its information, less so now because of TikTok, but still completely massive. But also, if they're willing to do it for YouTube, are they willing to do it for Gmail? Are they willing to do it for Google Drive? Are they willing to do it for any number of services that they provide to millions upon millions upon millions of Americans? We've seen examples where Google has removed documents and videos from people's Google Drives. You put something in a Google Drive thinking it's safe there. Google is looking at it and removing it because they don't want you to have it or don't think you should have it. What about the phones? What about the information on your Google phone or your Google Wi-Fi? Google Wi-Fi is everywhere now. Are they going to capitulate to censorship demands about the infrastructure of the internet, especially now that the FCC has allowed the Biden administration to claim dictatorial ownership over the internet infrastructure itself? I mean, this is huge and hugely damaging and hugely dangerous and sort of beyond censorship, because that's to do with a violation of a number of rights. And I talked a little bit about it yesterday, but the idea that the rights enumerated in the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, are not a game mechanic that you're supposed to try to get around. That's the way the Democrats see it. The Democrats see the Bill of Rights as like a puzzle that if you solve it, you get to violate it. If you get to redefine a word here or there, suddenly you get to take everybody's guns and silence everybody. If you take it for its most literal interpretation, you can get away with a lot of seeming, not perfectly technical violations of it. I think that's a major misunderstanding a lot of people have, and it's really been sort of purposefully put into people's minds. You know, you can think about the Second Amendment. People go, well, if it only applies to muskets, then I'm for it. But it doesn't apply to weapons of war. It's like, of course it applies to weapons of war. See, that's the difference between maybe what it says in its text, a well-regulated militia being necessary for the safety of the state, into what it really means at a principle level, which is the American people get to arm and defend themselves. They do not need to be helpless victims, even against their own government. It means you have a right and a human dignity that is guaranteed by your ability to have appropriate and adequate weaponry for the modern world. That's what it means. That's what it really means. You can go in and pick it apart word by word, but why would you do that? Why would you do that? So when it comes to the First Amendment, talked about it a million times, the idea of, freedom of the press, and the press being simply a placeholder word, the intention behind that is to say the technology to spread ideas, the technology necessary to take an idea from the spoken word to people around you to infinite numbers of people all over the world. That's what the press is the ability to do that. So in the modern world, just like ARs are the modern muskets, the internet is the modern press. It's a modern printing press. So that's what needs to be protected. That's what needs to be enshrined, has been enshrined in a principled way, not in a way that is like just a legal barrier, an obstacle for you to try to get around somehow. And that's how the Democrats treat it, because they're weaselly little lawyers. I think this is especially important in differentiating what the principles of the two sides of the political divide are, because it's been thrown so utterly and completely out of whack by this point by the domination of the left of the by the left of the media landscape and the education system and so much more over the last several decades, that people can say the most embarrassingly off target lies about the intentions or the purpose of Republican legislation or beliefs, and people believe it. So I want to go to a video, and this is actually from a few days ago. I just haven't gotten to it yet. But it's the Chicago mayor, Mayor Johnson's migrant housing plan. He gives a speech in which he does the only thing that Democrats know how to do, which is take perfectly reasonable, logical, loving, beneficial policies that would benefit everybody from the Republicans and discredit it on the basis of an assumed and, in fact, completely imagined undercurrent of racism or weird baseless hatred of the Republican Party. It's pure projection. And it would be easy just to laugh this off if this wasn't the mayor of the third largest city in America, an incredibly powerful person who is the chief executive of millions and millions of people. And it just goes to show how what dire straits America is in, that people saying things like this aren't laughed off the stage and out of office. That's the fact. This is where we are. You have to treat it with the seriousness it deserves. Let's go now to clip number 7. This is Mayor Brandon Johnson blaming the city migrant crisis on the far right January 6th and the Civil War of all things. Let's watch.
You know, what we've seen is a very raggedy form instituted by right-wing extremism. Everyone knows that the right-wing extremism in this country has targeted democratically ran cities. And quite frankly, they've been very intentional about going after democratically ran cities that are led by people of color. And their whole motivation is to create disruption and chaos, because that's what that particular party has been about. Right. This is the same political party that did not want to accept that President Obama was actually an American. It's the same Republican right-wing extremism that stormed the Capitol. It's the same right-wing extremism that refuses to accept the results of the Civil War. It's raggedy. It's disrespectful. It's mean-spirited. It's an unclean spirit, quite frankly. And so I got you. I got you. I
don't even know. You know, like, what do you even say to that? How do you argue with somebody who lives in a total fantasy world? What is he even talking about? Refuse to accept the results of the Civil War? What? What? Honestly, I don't even know a nearly 200-year-old conflict. What? But people, you know, they buy this crap. They believe this crap. And it's because these ideas have been ingrained in people for so long. This was posted from I/O on Twitter. This is it's a slide from a college lesson. This is how they describe left and right. The left is rational, egalitarian, international, and progressive. The right is irrational and racist. And this is what people grow up learning. You know, it becomes obvious what dire straits we're in when you look at the principles underlying so many of our laws and the intention of legislation, that sort of thing. And the way people are led to believe things that are so demonstrably untrue or just ridiculous in the offing, which is why I always try to differentiate the deception and lies and true intention of the people at the top from the average person that's falling for these lies, which is not what the left does. So what the left does, what you just saw Mayor Johnson do of Chicago, is claim a moral superiority over everyone on the right, saying that the right has basically an unclean spirit. It's like evil, because any criticism that the left gets isn't legitimate criticism. It can't possibly be because of the evidence of the outcome of their policies. It must be rooted in some imagined, intangible, secret desire to relitigate the Civil War or something. You know, we criticize Democrat policies everywhere because they're bad. And this guy comes out and says, Republicans, how exactly did he phrase it? He says their whole motivation is sowing chaos, particularly in cities that have people of color running them. as if Chicago is some beacon of freedom and cleanliness and safety, and Republicans are just mad that a black guy is mayor. And so we're like trying to undermine it because we can't have a black guy run a good city. No, your city is in chaos. Your city is collapsing. Your city is instituting the most ridiculous policies the world has ever seen, such as police have to radio in and get permission before they chase a criminal that's running away from them, which has resulted in some of the highest crime rates, gun rates, death rates that the world has ever seen, let alone America. And so they're so far off the mark. And I get why they're doing it, because all they have is to try to undermine the motivation behind Republicans, because the points Republican makings are in fact valid. They can't actually argue on the points of logic and reasonability and effectiveness and outcome. So they have to undermine the statements by ascribing to it some imagined racism, as if our desire to have Chicago, once known as like the shining city on the hill, one of the greatest cities in the history of the world, that's now a rat's nest of crime and psychopathy, as if our desire to return it to its former glory is about avenging Nathan Bedford Forrest. Like, what is he even talking about? It's complete, utter madness, stupidity. He brings up Obama not being an American citizen. And was he? Oh, by the way, I should probably lay out. What is he even talking about? He's talking about the fact that Chicago, as a sanctuary city, having voted for open borders, having voted for a Democrat president who has completely invaded our country with foreign elements and is now bussing them into your home and your neighborhood, and it's causing a lot of problems in Chicago from his own constituents. And it's to such a degree now that they can't even handle it with city facilities, and they've drafted churches in the area to serve as the makeshift colonies while they build literal colonies for the migrants who are now displacing and taking benefits and jobs and property and space away from the people that were born there and grew up there, or whose families have been there for generation upon generation. Nobody's happy about this. So his response, well, if you're against this, you must think Obama is a Kenyan. What? So again, it's like this would never work in a society that was intelligent. It would just never work with a population that was informed and thoughtful and conscientious. It requires stupidity. It requires emotionality and being able to manipulate people on a sub-logical level. And so I point to this, which is – this is what people are learning. And I remember even when I was in high school, I went to a high school that was – half of my classes were community college classes. So I was in Houston Community College, and I would have to like get in arguments with college students. I'm like a junior in high school. This guy's like 35 and like going back for his degree. And they literally are like, you know, if you were to ask them, what's the difference between Republicans and Democrats? They're like, oh, well, Democrats love everyone and they want everyone to be happy and safe and good. And Republicans are bad and evil and they love oil companies and they hate the environment. It's like that's actually what they believe. That's actually what a huge number of Americans are stupid enough to believe. I understand that the liberal policies ruin everything, except for the people at the very top who are cynically manipulating everybody else. I don't believe that the Democrats, the average Democrat on the street, like loves having poop on their sidewalk. They don't, obviously. That's the outcome of their policies, because their policies are bad and dumb and wrong. But I'm smart and thoughtful and empathetic enough to understand that the people voting for these policies are doing it thinking the policies are good. The outcome is just bad. These people tell you that Republicans want the bad outcome. And so if you are with the Republicans, you must be evil. I mean, it's so simplistic. And here's the, again, college. This is a post from a college course. And this is what people are being taught in college, that the left, the qualities of the left are that they're rational. Oh, yeah. They're rational. You know,
If you've ever gotten into an argument with someone over whether the left has taken over education, this is the Trump card right here. You just show them this. You say, tell me the left has not taken over higher education.
Yeah, 100%. No, the rational left, you know, the men can get pregnant left. They're the rational ones. The left is rational, they say. They're egalitarian, internationalist. Well, that's accurate. And then they say progressive, which means nothing. That's not a word that means anything, actually. What are you progressing towards is what matters. Whereas the right, they say, this is what's being taught to college students who don't know any better. The right is irrational, racist, nationalist, and retrogressive. And again, I just feel like any person with real world experience, any person with just a head on their shoulders, if you were to show them something like this, they should and would just immediately go, you're full of crap, man. Because nobody goes, oh, yeah, I'm right wing because I hate rationality. I love irrationalness and I'm a racist, so I'm on the right. Nobody believes that. And anybody hearing this should understand this doesn't make any sense. Clearly, whoever wrote this is trying to manipulate me by lying to me. I'll just say, I've said since the beginning of the conflict in Israel that there's something weird that happens when Israel comes into the conversation, where suddenly, and this is why it's so frustrating to me, suddenly the right wing becomes all of the terrible things that the left says they are. It's very weird how it happens. I guess the left wing does too, because obviously support for Israel is a cross the divide thing. In fact, there was a vote yesterday in Congress to equate anti-Semitism to anti-Zionism, or vice versa. Two people did not vote yes. Thomas Massey is the only one that voted no, and Rashida Tlaib just didn't vote. Everybody else voted in favor of this. So obviously this is a cross-platform thing, but I was just thinking about this because, again, when you look at this slide from a college course and they say the right is irrational, racist, nationalist, and retrogressive, it's like not true for the vast majority of people on the right wing who are literally just like, just want to not have their money stolen in the form of taxes, just want to have their kids be able to walk to school safely, be able to walk down their street even at night without being in fear of their lives from some random criminal that's been arrested 9 times in the last year and has never been charged for anything. Like, it's just simple, perfectly rational things to want to have in a first world nation in the 21st century. So this description of right-wingers as irrational, racist, retrogressive doesn't make any sense till Israel comes into play. And then it's like, well, we have to kill the brown people because God wants Jesus to come back from this promise 6,000 years ago. It's like, no. No. What? No. No. Stop it. Please, for the love of God, stop it. Stop being the things that they say you are when you're not in any other circumstance. Again, nobody, like, you can go to the most right-wing rallies or anything. You hear the same stuff you hear at InfoWars. I remember this, the first Proud Boys rally I went to in Portland, Oregon, because we're meeting beforehand, and, like, you know, it's a bunch of good old boys. It's like lots of dudes smoking Marlboro Reds with tattoos and trucker hats, and it's like, ooh, pretty rough crowd we're dealing with here. And certainly from the stereotype, you would think that what you'd hear is just like, we got to keep these black people out of power, you know, just something like horrible and vicious. But instead, it's literally just like InfoWars, even like Daily Wire talking points, where they're just like, man, we just want everybody to be for every race, color, and creed. I don't care who you are. You're American. You're my brother. Like, that's the real Republican. That's the real conservative. That's the real American who actually legitimately and strongly believes in the value of every human soul, the value, the responsibility that you have as a citizen of America to uphold our sacred values. That's what real Republicanism is about. Real conservatism is about. And yet then it comes to Israel and it all just gets thrown out the window. And it's like, yeah, bomb the mud people. We don't care. And it's crazy. I also just want to point out as a final note to this Chicago nonsense, Chicago's mayor, what he's talking about there was this program to use churches now to house the migrants. Mayor Brandon Johnson's controversial plan to house migrants in Chicago is forging ahead with the construction of a government-run tent encampments in Brighton Park, despite incomplete environmental assessment and stirring debate among the city's residents and leadership. So, hard to really overemphasize what a crazy thing is going on here. Our government is building colonies for foreigners on our land, in our cities, in our parks. They are constructing and housing and then populating colonies in our country of foreigners who haven't even applied legally to get here. Completely crazy, completely and utterly insane that this is happening. But there it is. And of course, his response to claim that, I guess, to criticize this absolutely unprecedented in world history madness that's going on. Maybe it's not, but I can't think of another example. I cannot think of another example where this has ever happened anywhere. I guess I'd have to really think about it, but I guess it kind of happened in Palestine, actually, now that I mention it. It did kind of happen there, but in a different way. But like, you literally can't imagine in history this ever taking place anywhere else. Colonization used to be really strong countries going into weaker ones and just setting up shop there. The weaker ones just had to deal with it because they couldn't stop them. But you never had powerful states. You never saw a weak state go to a powerful state and the powerful state building colonies for the weaker state in their own border. It's insane this is happening. It benefits absolutely nobody except for the people who benefit from lowered wages and government contracts and the people who despise America and want to see it destroyed, or despise white people and want to see the white people become a minority in this country. I mean, I guess it benefits the most hateful, destructive people in the world, but doesn't benefit their neighbors, doesn't benefit the people who live around this park at all, even a little bit. And so in order to not have to actually make that argument, not have to actually contend with that reality, Mayor Johnson has taken the well-established and effective tactic amongst the Democrats of saying, oppose this and you're a Confederate. Oppose this insane and unprecedented and hugely damaging and very unpopular policy, and that means that you are a racist that just hates me because I'm black. That's what he's saying there. Apparently this works. And he says this is far right. He basically says if you disagree with me here, you are a domestic terrorist that stormed the Capitol on January 6th. The reality is that everybody opposing him is a Democrat, and most of them are minorities. But here's a story about what they're actually doing. Why are migrants coming to Chicago? Churches to house arrivals. Brighton Park migrant base camp construction could start Wednesday. In less than an hour on Tuesday morning, two buses filled with migrants arrived in Chicago from Texas, carrying just some of the more than 300 people expected that day. And of course, there have been tens of thousands over the last several years, as millions upon millions of foreigners have been allowed to pour into our country and have been shipped to the people that voted to be sanctuary cities. This is your fault. You asked for this. Now you're getting it. Shut up. Chicago migrant crisis. Crews begin construction of a Brighton Park migrant camp. Don't you love that? Like, this is a crisis as they're building the infrastructure to continue and exacerbate the crisis. But who's against this? Well, Chicago's progressive coalition is struggling with migration. In the Windy City for the past few weeks, Chicago City Council has been tearing itself apart over a proposal to hold a referendum on whether or not to appeal the executive order from 1985, which declared the place a sanctuary city for illegal immigrants. Some 20,000 or so migrants bused in from Texas over the last year have stretched the city's financial capabilities, and the people that are opposing this are progressives who run that city and are responsible for all of their policies, despite the fact that they blame the Confederates. Anger, frustration boil over at hearing on migrant crisis as breach deepens between city and state. Members of the Chicago City Council unleashed their anger and frustration Friday at a five-hour committee hearing that focused on City Hall, spotlighting the escalating humanitarian crisis posed by the thousands of migrants sent to Chicago. More than 15,000 people have moved to Chicago in the last 13 months from overseas and different countries. And of course, the main people protesting this are, as reported here from CBS Austin, black residents of Chicago who slammed the city over the $51 million in migrant care, demanding reparations. So, I mean, this is just, I guess it's just American politics, right? They bring in millions of foreigners. They build them a colony in your house. The black people that live in the neighborhood go, hey, this is messed up. And the black mayor says, you hate black people. If you oppose this, you must be a Confederate who never still a lot of stories to cover. But I'm going to sort of zoom out here. We're going to talk about what's going on globally at a more bird's eye view level, looking both into the distant past and distant future. Before I do that, I do want to remind you, tell you if you haven't heard, folks, Turbo Force Plus is back in stock and 25% off. Plus, you're getting free shipping and double Patriot points as you are on all products at InfoWarsStore.com during this Cyber Week massive sales event. Biggest sale of the year, up to 60% off, plus double Patriot points and free shipping on just about all products on the site. I've said it before, take advantage of the free shipping to get some of the bigger ticket items like the water filters and air filters that can be quite sizable and be expensive to ship. Well, we'll cover that cost if you go to InfoWarsStore.com and make the purchase in the next week during Cyber Week. And, of course, Turbo Force Plus, incredibly powerful energy drink mix, more power, more strength, and more energy from Turbo Force Plus. Vitamin C, thiamine, niacin, vitamin B6, L-taurine, beta-alanine. It's got all of the power and even more than of your average energy drink, your top of the line energy drink, I should say. But it's all natural products, very powerful, and it doesn't have the crash that you can expect from something loaded down with sugar and caffeine. Instead, Turbo Force uses a powerful combination of herbs and vitamins and minerals to give you a boost that can last all day. I love Turbo Force Plus, and I'm very glad it's back in stock and 25% off. So stock up now. I mean, this stuff sells out at full price like hotcakes. So stock up now and make sure to secure your Turbo Force Plus today during the Cyber Week sale at InfoWarsStore.com. Now I want to play a video from one of our favorite little goblins. Clip number 13. Is World Economic Forum lead advisor Yuval Noah Harari. I'd say he's the spiritual advisor. He's the spiritual guru. He is the messenger to launder the really inhuman and despotic designs of the World Economic Forum to the wider public so that they feel like they're engaged in some sort of scientific progress when in reality they are forging the chains of their own slavery. He's a sophisticated character. And he says in 200 years or less, there won't be any more Homo sapiens on Earth. What could that possibly mean? Let's listen and discuss the view of this mindset all the way back in the 1940s. First, here's Yuval Noah Harari.
They say 200 years. To give a conservative estimate, there won't be Homo sapiens on planet Earth.
200 years?
200 years, and I think this is a conservative estimate.
Wow.
Maybe even 100 years. It's not that we'll destroy ourselves in some calamity. Much more likely, we will use advanced technology. Biotechnology, nanotechnology, direct brain-computer interfaces to upgrade Homo sapiens into different kinds of beings, beings which are different from us much more than we are different from Neanderthals, beings which will have different bodies, different minds, different brains. I mean, the big products of the coming century will not be shoes or clothes or cars or weapons. The big products of the 21st century are going to be bodies and minds. So I think we are heading towards the upgrading of Homo sapiens into gods.
Well, there it is. Spells it out right there for you. We will be as gods. I mean, that might have been word for word what the serpent told Eve. We don't know. We're not sure about the exact, you know, words being used there. But this is what transhumanism means. This is what anti-humanism means. To these people, humanity is just a stepping stone to their own aggrandizement into the place of gods. I've said a million times, the reason why they are so anti-nature, why they're so anti-human, why they're so anti-God, is because they are at war with God in an attempt to usurp him, okay? And this is the ultimate goal of the conspiracy, the global conspiracy, is to establish a system in which a very few select number of people will receive the now very possible biological and technological upgrades to have infinite life, inhuman intelligence, infinite strength. I mean, when you're talking about gene editing and chip implants and virtual reality, I mean, you're talking about power beyond humans that does approach a sort of petulant view of God. But you can't have everybody enjoy that. Not every human can have this. I mean, I was talking about this with the War Room crew yesterday about AI and how they AI and migration and how essentially what they're trying to set up, in my view, is like a laundry cycle where they bring people from the third world into the first world. The first world is constantly creating an overabundance of food and you know, healthcare and medicine and everything. They export that to the third world. So the third world population will be extremely high, but it'll be people living in desperate poverty and despair. And then they'll get a chance to move to the first world. And once they move to the first world, through chemical poisoning and indoctrination and all the other various methods by which they destroy your humanity, those people will be worn down. And by the next generation or two or three generations on, the descendants of the third worlders will be fully first world in that they will be transgender and sterilized and they'll hate humanity. And then they'll die off only to be replaced by a new generation of migrants. And you keep this going because what they really don't want is anybody to oppose them, especially anybody to oppose them in strength, in numbers, with intelligence and resources. So if you just have people that are constantly being reset to zero, constantly being brought in as small pockets of population, so they never actually have the cultural or population, you know, cultural impetus or population numbers to pose a threat, to form a group in opposition to what the leadership is doing. That's what they want. They want this just endless cycle of repetition. And I can't remember who I was talking to on the crew, maybe Danny, was saying, you know, but these people, why would they want, you know, nothing will work once, you know, if you just have a bunch of people that you know, you purposely keep living in like huts and barely subsisting on handouts, you can't bring those people into the first world and have everything function normally. We know this and we're seeing the evidence of it with all the near misses at airports and things like that. These complicated systems break down if you don't have quality people who are hired on merit to run them, unless you have AI. And that's the importance of AI, is that once they get AI, the humans that they now need to do the menial tasks that our betters, the gods, don't want to do, those will just be replaced by robots or AI, and then they'll be done with the inconvenience of humanity, you know, having a say in anything. But all this is to say that the ideas that Yuval Noah Harari is expressing are clearly not new. In fact, they may very well be the oldest ideas in the history of man, older than the pyramids, older than anything, especially if you have a religious view and you take the Garden of Eden to be some either metaphorical or just legitimate history of the world. Just about the first idea ever expressed is if you follow the devil, you'll be a god. So, I mean, the idea he's expressing is not new by any means, but even the techniques of manipulating and controlling and designing and advancing humanity through technology is not new. The technology that we have now is bringing this view, this goal into the realm of possibility in a way that has never been done before. But I want to read a couple excerpts from a book written in the 1940s. It was written in 1943 during the heights of World War II by C.S. Lewis. It's a short book, and if you haven't read it, you should. And I've highlighted some things from this chapter. But really, I should read the whole thing. The Abolition of Man. The Abolition of Man by C.S. Lewis, written 80 years ago, says this: man's conquest of nature is an expression often used to describe the progress of applied science. So let us consider three typical examples: the airplane, the wireless, and the contraceptive. In a civilized community, in peacetime, anyone can pay for them and use these things. But it cannot strictly be said that when he does, he is exercising his own proper or individual power over nature. If I pay you to carry me, I'm not therefore myself a strong man. Any or all of these things I've mentioned can be withheld by some men, from some men by other men, by those who sell or those who allow the sale or those who are the sources of production or those who make the goods. What we call man's power is in reality a power possessed by some men which they may or may not allow other men to profit by. And we'll continue on the other side, talk about where this conspiracy is really headed. All right, welcome back, folks. Third hour of American Journal is on. Reminding everybody that the reason we say that the globalists are anti-human, the reason that we say that they worship Satan, because when you get to the end of the line, the inevitable outcome of their plans, their designs, their schemes that they're already running and think that they're on the cusp of achieving, the obvious outcome is a form of pseudo-immortality. As Yuval Noah Harari just said, they're trying to make themselves as gods. And the fact that this guy isn't, like, anybody who hears this should shudder. I mean, it's horrifying that this guy not just believes this, but is treated as a respected academic who actually has the ear of the people with the power to put these plans into motion. It's horrifying, and anybody should recognize this. Again, it just goes back to the principle, foundation of morality, and the idea that I shouldn't even have to explain that somebody who wants to make themselves a god is somebody that should be prevented by any means from attempting such a thing. It's disturbing I even have to explain that. But it's not anything new at all, even a little bit. This is a book from 80 years ago, talking more about some of the processes being used by the Nazis or communists, things more along the lines of Brave New World or 1984, which still understood from their limited technological advancement what the purpose of the technology was and how people and men in power would use the technology to achieve this very end of making themselves as gods and redesigning humanity in their own image. And again, this is in the 40s. There's no way they could have imagined to a authentic degree AI and virtual reality and how far things have gotten now. And at this point, said a million, I mean, they really believe. If you talk to billionaires, they aren't talking about sports. They aren't talking about politics in the way that you see on Fox News. When billionaires get together, they're talking about immortality, technology. They're talking about reverse aging. They're talking about secret technology that we don't even know about. This is why they hate us, by the way. They don't like that we're bringing this information and bringing this discussion down to the level of us underlings. They would rather they be the ones who discuss things like immortality. They don't even want people to know about this. They don't want you to have this, right? This is not something for your consumption. This is something that they get to keep for themselves. Immortality gives you an idea of how it will be implemented. But again, C.S. Lewis just nailed this 80 years ago when he says that the power that man has over nature, and that's what Yuval Noah Harari is talking about, is really, as he says, man's power. It's a power possessed by some men, which they may or may not allow other men to profit by. From this point of view, he says, what we call man's power over nature turns out to be a power exercised by some men over other men with nature as its instrument. He says, in order to understand fully what man's power over nature and therefore the power of some men over other men really means, we must picture the race extended in time from the date of its emergence to that of its extinction. Each generation exercises power over its successors, and each, insofar as it modifies the environment bequeathed to it and rebels against tradition, resists and limits the power of its predecessors. This modifies the picture, which is sometimes painted of a progressive emancipation from tradition and a progressive control of natural processes resulting in a continual increase of human power. So that's what Yuval Noah Harari is describing, somehow dominating nature, taking control of it, and causing a continual increase of human power up to and exceeding the point of gods. In reality, of course, if any one age really attains by eugenics and scientific education the power to make its descendants what it pleases, all men who live after it are patients of that power. They're weaker, not stronger, for though we may have put the wonderful machines in the hands of those we have preordained how they are to use them. We'll continue with this on the other side. This really is the ultimate point. And once you understand that, then you work backwards to defeat them. We'll talk about some more of these stories I have, some interesting developments in terms of crime. We got some updates to OpenAI. We'll try to get to some of that. But I think, you know, the best service InfoWars can do is not cover all the time and exclusively the breaking news that so many other people are aware of and giving their hot takes on, but instead looking at the conspiracy, the global, unified, singular conspiracy engaged in by a variety of people of races, colors, and creed who all are vying and jockeying for that top spot on the pyramid, hoping that they'll be the first through the gate and be able to then exercise unlimited and continuous power over the rest of humanity. And talk about how this looks in a spiritual and a physical and temporal dimension. So again, that number, 1-877-789-2539. Open lines, call about whatever you want, 1-877-789-2539. So C.S. Lewis is laying out the contradictions inherent in attempting to establish total control over nature and humanity, and the way that this is a almost self-defeating process. And he points out that what we call power over nature is really power that some men have over other men. And he talks about how you have to apply time as a aspect of what's going on in a way that a lot of people don't. It'll make sense when we read more of this. Again, I've highlighted so much of this, I should just be reading it, as C.S. Lewis hardly requires elaboration. He says, if, as is almost certain, the age which has thus attained maximum power over posterity were also the age most emancipated from tradition, it would be engaged in reducing the power of its predecessors almost as drastically as that of its successors. The last men, far from being the heirs of power, will be, of all men, most subject to the dead hand of the great planners and conditioners, and will themselves exercise least power upon the future. Man's conquest of nature, if the dreams of some scientific planners are realized, like Yuval Noah Harari, means the rule of a few hundreds of men over billions upon billions of men. There neither is nor can be any simple increase of power on man's side. Each new power won by man is a power over man as well. Each advance leaves him weaker as well as stronger. In every victory, besides being the general who triumphs, he is also the prisoner who follows the triumphal car. He says, I'm only making clear what man's conquest of nature really means, and especially that final stage of the conquest, which, perhaps, is not far off. The final stage has come when man, by eugenics, by prenatal conditioning, and by an education and propaganda based on perfectly applied psychology, has obtained full control over himself. Human nature will be the last part of nature to surrender to man. The battle will then be won. We shall have taken the thread of life out of the hands of Clotho and be henceforth free to make our species whatever we wish it to be. The battle will indeed be won, but who precisely will have won it? For the power of man to make himself what he pleases means, as we have seen, the power of some men to make other men what they please. The man molders of this new age will be armed with the powers of an omnicompetent state and an irresistible scientific technique. We shall get at last a race of conditioners who really can cut out all posterity in what shape they please, right? Controlling the very shape of humanity for all of time. And he mentions Tao here. He means like the basically sort of the energy that binds the world together, sort of a spiritual form of nature, sort of. It's hard to explain, but he's using the definition of Tao from Taoism. The second difference is even more important. In the older systems, both the kind of man the teachers wished to produce and their motives for producing him were prescribed by the Tao, a norm to which the teachers themselves were subject and from which they claimed no liberty to depart. They did not cut men to some pattern they had chosen. They handed on what they had received. They initiated the young neophyte into the mystery of humanity, which overarched him and them alike. It was but old birds teaching young birds to fly. This will be changed. Values are now mere natural phenomenon. Judgments of value are to be produced in the pupil as part of the conditioning. Whatever Tao there is will be the product, not the motive, of education. The conditioners have been emancipated from all that. It is one more part of nature which they have conquered. The ultimate springs of human action are no longer for them something given. They have surrendered like electricity. It is the function of the conditioners to control, not to obey them. They know how to produce conscience and decide what kind of conscience they will produce. They themselves are outside, above, for we are assuming the last stage of man's struggle with nature. The final victory has been won. Human nature has been conquered and, of course, has conquered in whatever sense those words now may bear. The conditioners, then, are to choose what kind of artificial Tao they will, for their own good reasons, produce in the human race. They are the motivators, the creators of motives. But how are they going to be motivated themselves? At first, they may look upon themselves as servants and guardians of humanity and conceive that they have a duty to do good. But it is only by confusion that they can remain in this state. They recognize the concept of duty as the result of certain processes which they can now control. Their victory has consisted precisely in emerging from the state in which they were acted upon by those processes to the state in which they use them as tools. To some, it will appear that I'm inventing a difficulty for my conditioners. Other, more simple-minded critics may ask, why should you suppose that they will be bad men? But I'm not supposing them to be bad men. They are, rather, not men in the old sense at all. They are, if you like, men who have sacrificed their own share in traditional humanity in order to devote themselves to the task of deciding what humanity shall henceforth mean. Good and bad applied to them are words without content, for it is from them that the content of these words will henceforth be derived. Does that make sense to anybody else? Is this a little too esoteric for everybody? It makes perfect sense to me. The idea that these people, like Yuval Noah Harari, may now, and I think this is perhaps debatable, think that they're acting for the good of humanity. But what they're describing is a process by which they will be the ultimate arbiters and they will have the sole say over what good is and how we conceive of good. I think the point he makes there that before, the responsibility of every generation was to receive the reality of humanity and then teaching young people how to preserve and pass on tradition to like a cutting off, a complete segregation of the old and the new, where the new form of morality and principles and belief of what is good and what is bad will be totally redesigned and built from the ground up by people like Yuval Noah Harari, who seem to have an ego, which means their perception of good is whatever benefits them and their perception of bad is whatever opposes them. And C.S. Lewis, as many others at the time in the 1940s, thought this was imminent, thought it was like very close through eugenics. And he even mentions like prenatal programming. I mean, genetic editing didn't exist back then. I don't even think DNA had been discovered yet. Now they have the technology, the capability, the techniques to be used to literally recreate humanity. They can't create anything. And this is a classic thing from C.S. Lewis's best friend, J.R.R. Tolkien, when he says, you know, evil doesn't have the ability to create. It can only distort and destroy. They don't have the ability to create life. They don't have the ability to create humanity. They have the ability to warp and manipulate what already exists to their own ends. And that's exactly what they're doing. It is the ultimate fulfillment of the promise of the serpent in the Garden of Eden. It is Satanism in its most primordial form. It is a total inversion of what every human culture has perceived as morality from the very beginning. And they are now, as they were in the 1940s, but 80 years on the cusp of achieving the technological necessity, the technological prerequisite to fulfilling this goal. And we have to stop them. You have to understand where they're going to head them off at the pass. Breaking news here. Representative George Santos has been expelled from Congress in a historic vote. The House today voted to expel Representative George Santos over his many fabrications on the 2022 campaign trail and his two federal indictments. The vote makes Santos just the sixth lawmaker and the first Republican to be expelled from the House in U.S. history. The vote comes after a House Ethics Committee released a report accusing Santos of a complex web of unlawful activity involving his campaign, personal and business finances. The measure required a two-thirds majority vote to pass. It came even after most of House Republican leadership turned against expelling Santos, prompting doubts as whether enough Republicans would vote for the expulsion. A New York Times report last December revealed that Santos had lied about key elements of his resume as a candidate, including claims he graduated from Baruch College and New York University and worked at Citigroup and Goldman Sachs. Further media reports have revealed shady campaign and personal finances, past debts and legal troubles in a variety of fraudulent schemes and fictional claims. He was indicted in May on 13 counts, including charges of wire fraud and money laundering. A superseding indictment in October charged him with 10 more counts, including credit card fraud and aggravated identity theft. He's pled not guilty to all the charges. The last straw for many lawmakers was the Ethics Committee report, which detailed substantial evidence of uncharged and unlawful conduct, including allegedly stealing from his 2022 campaign. Yeah, good riddance. I don't know. I mean, this guy's... He's just been a distraction since he came into office. And it's one thing to say, you know, look at what they're doing to Donald Trump and just the litany of legal abuses they're leveraging on him. Totally baseless, totally nonsensical, totally stupid and objectionable. And so we oppose those at every pass. And then you go to someone like George Santos, who is clearly a scumbag. He's just clearly a scumbag, man. And good riddance to him. That's what I have to say about that. I don't know. People fall into a habit of wanting to defend Republicans because they see what they're doing to Donald Trump, and then they assume that any accusation against a Republican must be of similar deception. But that's not always true. And when you've got... Sorry. Oh, yeah. All right, we're going to go out to phone calls here. There's still some lines open if you want to call. The number to dial, 1-877-789-2539. I do want to go to one story here because I thought this was interesting. The story broke yesterday that an FBI agent had his car jacked in a brazen daytime armed carjacking in Washington, D.C. I didn't really cover it, even though... You know, it's just one of those things where it's like, yeah, obviously. I mean, what do you expect when you allow criminality to flourish in your city? Everybody's going to become a victim. But here's the interesting twist to it. FBI releases photos of suspects in D.C. carjacking of FBI agent at gunpoint. $10,000 reward offered. So Washington, D.C. is one of the most popular locations in America for carjackings, to the extent that DC started suing car manufacturers saying their cars were too easy to steal. That's the result when it's you who's being carjacked. When it's you who's being carjacked, it's just, there's nothing we can do about it. It's probably the car's fault. And you just have to deal with it. and we're not going to send anybody to jail. There's going to be no investigation. But when one of theirs gets carjacked, when they become subject to the conditions that they have created for everybody else, well, that will not stand. And the FBI is unleashing its power to get these people who have probably carjacked 100 people. I mean, carjackers sell the cars to organized criminal networks that then refurbish, break down, or resell them in some way. So this is like a living for these guys. They go out and steal a car once a day. That's how they make their living. Like, this is a industry at this point. So they're probably confused now. They're like, wait, but we've stolen 100 cars and nobody's even done anything ever. Now they stole an FBI agent's car. So now there are pictures everywhere. There's a $10,000 reward, and there's an all-out hunt to get these guys for daring to inflict upon the authorities the same criminality they inflict upon the citizens. So the FBI has released photos of the suspect involved in a recent carjacking incident in the Capitol Hill area of Washington, D.C., where an FBI agent was carjacked at gunpoint. In a coordinated effort with the Metropolitan Police's carjacking task force, the FBI is intensifying its search for the individuals responsible. Yeah, they're taking time off from kicking the door down of, you know, Catholic guys who protest abortion. They're taking people off of the all-important beat of surveilling Christians, and they're going after these carjackers for daring to have the temerity, the gall, to commit crime against them. No, you're supposed to commit crime against everybody else, you fools. In a statement provided to NBC Washington, the FBI detailed the events, saying, at this time, we can confirm that an FBI employee was carjacked on the afternoon of November 29th. The vehicle was recovered, and the FBI Washington field office, in conjunction with the Metropolitan Police Department's carjacking task force, is actively investigating the matter. For once, I'll add. The victim, an FBI agent, reported that the suspects had forcefully taken their vehicle at gunpoint as the agent was getting out of an FBI vehicle. Oh, so they stole the FBI vehicle. Okay. Okay, actually, that's a big deal. That actually is a very big deal. Holy crap. I've worked with FBI agents in the past. They carry arsenals in the back of their cars. It's crazy. We were hanging out because I was on a film set. We were filming things for the FBI. We had FBI agents as analysts, and sometimes they'd actually serve as actors in the roles. They all drive blacked out, all black SUVs, totally normal. Like, you wouldn't look twice at it on the street. The windows are tinted more than the average car, but the license plate is a normal license plate. Everything looks normal. Then they open up the back, and it's just rack upon rack upon rack of weapons. They've got grenades in there. They've got machine guns in there. I mean, it's an arsenal in the back of FBI cars. Maybe not everyone, but certainly some of them that I've seen. Literal arsenals in the back of these cars. If one of these cars gets stolen, that actually is a very big deal. But they found it and retrieved it, but the suspects are still at large. And they're offering a $10,000 reward for information that directly results in the arrest of the individuals connected to the carjacking event. The Bureau hints that there may be additional reward money accessible for information that proves to be instrumental. It's just such a typical example of the inevitable outcome of tyranny and despotism, that the very same crime that is allowed to run rampant against the citizen is not – they do not stand for it when it touches them. They'll let anything happen to you, but if those same criminals dare to target – the authorities who are responsible for law and order, then suddenly it's all hands on deck, full activation of the entire system to crack down on the criminals who otherwise would have gotten off scot-free, and, you know, Kia would have been sued. It's just utterly typical, and just another example, another little point in the decline of the American civilization from a freedom-loving republic to a despotic police state in which the de facto Praetorian Guard enjoys all of the rights and benefits it denies to its citizens. Straight out to your phone calls on the other side. Stay with us. All right, folks, directly out to your phone calls. James in Indiana. Let's talk about a VA scandal in Denver. Go ahead, James. You're on the air.
Yeah, I want to get to an article first. There's an article out called Sound Off, solutions needed for veterans. It's an article calling out the presidential candidate to respond to veteran suicide as it lays out how the government is fueling it. There's all types of news coming out of the Denver VA scandal. They were deliberately canceling out veterans' prosthetics. That'd be like legs and hands. It just seems like what a bunch of lowlifes.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I laid it out a few days ago when they were talking about the Transgender Day of Remembrance, and, you know, as if transgender people are experiencing some Holocaust genocide going on. 26 transgender people were murdered last year. 22 veterans commit suicide every day, and our government's priority is on the 26 a year, not the 22 a day. Astronomical, horrific numbers of our veterans committing suicide out of just sheer hopelessness, often combined and exacerbated by PTSD and, you know, just the feeling of being abandoned by people that you served and may have given your legs and arms for, treating you like dirt, making you, you know, travel to a different city and live in a hostel for a month just to get an appointment to get what you need. Veterans are taking their own lives on VA hospital campuses, a desperate form of protest against a system they don't feel has helped them. Just devastating. Absolutely devastating. I hadn't heard about the VA scandal in Denver yet. Can you tell us a little bit more about what exactly is happening?
There's a bunch of whistleblowers coming out. I mean, it's going to be as big as probably the Phoenix scandal. I'm not sure what exactly else is going on. I know there was another VA. They had a veteran that was going to commit suicide, and they went ahead, let him go, and then they killed themselves, and they settled out for $900,000. Mm. The government will hold no one accountable. They do the director shuffle. Basically, they'll take old management, put them somewhere else, and bring another management. So basically, put lipstick on a pig. Then they hand out millions of bonuses. The double standard is disgusting. When the government wants to target a medicated veteran, the government will violate their rights, fabricate evidence, use mob-like tactics, and weaponize everything around them. There's just no accountability in the VA system whatsoever.
Yeah.
And it's all these pills that are causing the suicide.
Oh, absolutely. No, it's – and, you know, a lot of it's on purpose. I mean, we've seen testimony from veterans who are like, you know, I was taking 50 pills a day for all this sort of stuff. Because, of course, it's a combination of a lot of things. It's the desire to, you know, spike the cannon, as it were, render incompetent the people that you have trained and armed to fight. You know, once they're done fighting for you, you don't want them to be able to fight anymore. So you want to just put them on some sort of antipsychotic chemical lobotomy. And then there's just the, you know, that just folds into the pharmaceutical madness of American healthcare of you have a problem, take a pill. Oh, that pill gave you another problem. Take this other pill to deal with the first pill. Oh, now those two pills are having a different condition. Well, let's throw in a third pill. And soon you're taking 30, 40, 50 pills a day. And it's just devastating to the body. And, you know, we've seen testimony of guys who are like, I was practically comatose taking all this medicine. I just stopped it all and am happy and healthy again. So this is deliberate. It's on purpose. It's spiking the cannon. It's horrific and devastating. And, of course, they'll blame not having resources. They blame a million different things. The reality is we have more than enough capability to deal with all of this stuff. They're making a choice not to. They're making a choice to build migrants' hospitals instead of serving the people that served us. It's very bad. Very, very bad. Thank you for the call, James. Let's go to Varney in Oklahoma, line 11. Go ahead, Varney. You're on the air.
Yeah, I was just bringing up the point that carjacking is a federal crime.
Is it?
They used it to round up gangs back in one of their crime bills. I worked for the Federal Bureau of Prisons.
So carjacking is always a federal crime?
They made it in one of their crime bills when they were rounding the gangs up years ago, because I saw young men in federal prison for carjacking.
Interesting.
Yeah, and I've watched the government round up the gangs, the militias, the separatists. Every time something comes along that the government doesn't like, they round up everybody and put them in prison.
Yeah, no.
That's what they're doing to the January 6th people.
100%. It's similar to what they did in San Francisco, right? It's not impossible to clean up the streets. It's just whether they want to or not. It's like they did in El Paso, cleaning up the streets of migrants for Biden to visit. It's not that it's impossible to take care of these problems. It's that they don't want to. And I mentioned it the other day, and it was Nick Fuentes that said it on Twitter about immigration. And I just the way he phrased it was just so perfect, where he's like, the guys on dinghies aren't the problem. When it comes to immigration, talking about Europe and Ireland and the UK, it's not hard to stop a aluminum boat filled with migrants. That's like the easiest thing in the world. The real things causing the problem are the people who are choosing not to. It's the people that are choosing to allow it. The big barrier to our prosperity and freedom and health as a country are the leadership who are choosing to do these things, not the events themselves or the crises themselves, which they create most of the time. Carjacking. I didn't realize carjacking was a federal crime. That is interesting. But I mean, we see the way that carjacking is being treated in big cities. They're literally suing the car companies for not making it harder to steal a car. It's just utter nonsense. And of course, they'll use the carjacking phenomenon as an excuse to like force car makers to put in like kill switches in their cars or other things that they want that have nothing to do with carjacking, but will be very useful in stopping people from going to protest if they don't want, or from escaping the government if they're being hunted. These things are all coming down the pipe as we increasingly enter a world controlled by AI that itself is controlled by, you know, the worst people on the planet who run our countries. Thank you for the call, Varney. Let's go to Sless in Ohio. Line number 3. Thanks for calling in, Sless. You're on the air.
Hey, Harrison. Great to have you back on the American Journal, brother.
Good to be back.
You're doing a great job, you and the crew. You've been doing a great job on the War Room, man. That Malaysia flight interview that you did was mind-blowing.
Totally wild.
I'm excited to hear more about it.
Yeah, you know, Ashton Forbes and myself are going to be on the Alex Jones Show at 1 p.m., so tune in for an even deeper dive into the fourth dimensional destruction of this airline flight. It's incredibly intriguing. Yeah, thank you for that, Celeste.
Absolutely. And Owen is always on my mind, man. I could go on for hours about everything I think about it. But I think that when the J6 guys went into jail and when Owen went into jail, we should have been protesting around our churches every day. You know what I'm saying?
Just absolutely.
Lawful and all that. But, man, if they can do it to him, they can do it to us. They can do it to anyone.
For sure. They can do it to me, for sure. I mean, everything I'm saying here might be presented to a court at some point. It's very scary.
Absolutely. And the other thing, I love InfoWars. I love all the shows. But let me just ask you this question. It's not a trick question. Who was in power when the Patriot Act was in place?
George W. Bush, although Joe Biden wrote it.
Right. Well, my point is we have all these hearings saying, hey, the CIA is doing this, the FBI is doing this, Owen's in prison, the J6ers are in prison. We have all this evidence, but nothing ever happens. So the only thing I can say about InfoWars is if we could just get out of, like, saying, well, the left is saying this about the right's not doing anything. You know, we've got the borders open. We've got a handful of Republicans even saying anything. We got to get out of the left and right and just say, hey, listen, I talk to people all the time, and they're like, I don't like politics. And I just ask, well, do you have goals in life? And they're like, yeah, of course I have goals. Would you want to know if your government is taking away your right to achieve those goals? And they're like, well, yeah, kind of. And then that kind of opens them up because, like, let's think about it. What have we done to stop the steal from the next election?
No, I agree. I mean, the other side of that is that it's a very long game that they're playing and that we have to play. It's taken them decades to get to this point. And you look at Donald Trump as a major setback to their plans and an example of how we can have victory in the future. All right, folks, some more breaking news before we go out to phone calls. Senators Marco Rubio and J.D. Vance are calling on Joe Biden to impose a travel ban on China over the unknown respiratory illness that is spreading. Writing a letter saying, Mr. President, in light of an unknown respiratory illness spreading throughout the People's Republic of China, we call on you to immediately restrict travel between the United States and the PRC. As you know, the Chinese Communist Party has a long history of lying about public health crises. During the COVID-19 pandemic, the CCP's obfuscation of the truth and lack of transparency robbed the United States of vital knowledge about the disease and its origin. That should probably happen. We don't know much about the mysterious respiratory illness. It's having shockingly similar videos come out from China of hospitals being overwhelmed that marked the initiation of the COVID pandemic. But obviously the takeaway of this is that Senator Marco Rubio and Senator J.D. Vance hate Chinese people. Those racist bastards. Let's go out to your phone call now. Tin Man in Texas, thanks so much for calling in. You're on the air.
Hey, how are you doing this morning?
Good, thank you.
Cool. Yeah, well, I got an idea, really, and I got it, you know, listening to you talk about the, you know, the all these controversies happening in all the cities, you know, like with immigrants and stuff like that. But my idea is, like, to use that against them. It's also a warning, too, because there's other people that probably think like me. But you could, like, build populist movements right now very easily. I mean, you look at, like, in Chicago, they gave $81 million to build a tent city. But they got homeless Chicagoans on the, you know, on the street, you know, they don't even care about. So, I mean, that's what I'm saying is, like, now's the best time to poke the bear, I think. I think we should all be poking the bear in all these cities, like, to get the populist movement going.
I'm almost picturing, I don't know if this is your idea, but I'm picturing, like, flyers that are made to look like they're Democrat flyers, like, celebrating what's happening, right? Like, going on being like, you know, thank you for voting for Democrats. Now these foreigners are getting $81 million. Sorry everything's so expensive, but, you know, keep voting for Democrats, and we'll keep delivering our promises.
Exactly. Because, I mean, once they all get on the same page, like, oh, man, these policies suck. Like, I mean, but I don't know. It's going to be – whoever is going to be the leader, it's kind of on every populist movement I've seen. It's not very good news for them. That's a warning.
Yeah, but, I mean, you're right, because there's so many things right now that sort of flip the typical paradigm on its head, whether it's things like this, like you've got – you know, neighborhoods that voted 98% Democrat going out and protesting and being furious at the Democrat mayor for Democrat policies. So is that not an opportunity to create a wedge and try to, you know, get them out of the Democrat plantation? Same thing, I think, with Israel. Again, very weird crossover with, like, Thomas Massie and Rashida Tlaib on the same side of an argument where they're not on any other side of the argument. I mean, it's kind of confusing. I think it's a good thing. I think that if you can break the paradigm and go, let's focus on the things we agree on, and maybe we can create some sort of party or identity over those things that benefit all Americans, regardless of your race, color, or creed, and cut out the divisive crap. Yeah. I mean, this right now is really like a prime time for crossing the aisle, not in a way that diminishes our side, but in a way that helps bring everybody under a single – I would hope would be a nationalist tent, because I really do think that's got to be the main argument is, like, you're an American citizen. You need, like, we are all American citizens. We all need to do what's best for us. This is a club that we're in that nobody else is in. And right now the people running the club love everybody outside of it, and the people inside the club are getting shafted at every turn. This is a huge opportunity for unity of the people against the authorities that are doing this to all of us. Final word, Tin Man?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you nailed it, man. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, if you poke the bear, well, one of my friends, let me give this shout out to you before I get off. One of my friends, he's doing this thing called the Million Town March, you know, where everybody just goes and marches to their town, you know. But it gets the word out, and you can use stuff like that to do it, to poke the bear. I mean, literally, that's what I want to say. It's I see the opportunity, and I want to point it out. That's it.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. I think it's a great opportunity right now to spread the word about why all of this stuff is being done. Thank you for the call, Tin Man. Let's go to Rob in Florida. You have a story about the Hawaii fires. Go ahead, Rob.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir. Thanks for calling in.
I had an interesting conversation with a neighbor of mine whose best friend from college is a top engineer at the naval base in Hawaii, working on the ship, and showed me a picture of her as if she was, the lady was taking the picture in the harbor, standing on a boat, and she works on all the laser technology is what I was told. And the ship she's standing on is flying a Chinese flag. And what this lady told me, that she brought up the whole do thing, was like, oh yeah, my friend works on them, and that whole thing was done by lasers, and these boats were in the harbor prior to that fire, getting, you know, everything coordinated and dialed in. She said there were several different ships. Some were different countries, but no U.S. ships. It was Chinese, and I don't know if she said whatever the other one she said, but I'm trying to coax this lady into giving me a copy of this picture so I can send it in to show you guys.
Please do.
But this lady's about to retire. She's worried that if she shares the picture, that somebody can mess with. But she said that this lady is like a no-joke Navy lady, that she's like, oh, yeah. She goes, I'm the one that coordinates all those weapons, calibrates them, and all that stuff. But she said for a fact that she believes that they were, you know, those ships were involved. She said that they used the satellites and coordinate, like, that time that there was the green lasers coming down to, like, scan that area. She had mentioned that also about that. Yes, that's what they were doing.
And then, well, you know, there's processes, you know, where you can protect whistleblowers. Maybe going to a senator or a congressman might be a good tactic, or, you know, just anonymously give it to us or another media outlet. I mean, I don't even care if it's us. I'd like for it to be us. She wants to send it to us. We can protect her identity.
As long as
the information gets out.
I think it's strange. Why would there be Chinese ships in the U.S. naval base?
That is very odd. I mean, that picture alone would be a revelation that people need to know about. Yeah, I'd love to hear more of that. If you're able to get the story and get the picture, we would love to receive that. Thank you for the call, Rob. Let's go finally to William in Arkansas. Comment on Yuval Noah Harari. Thanks for calling in. William, you're on the air.
Good to see you back. Wish everybody well straight out. You know, this guy's basically raping us, isn't he? I mean, he openly states, I can get into your brain or take something out. Openly states it. It's unreal. I don't know how we accept it. That's the hard part. The things that are going on right now are so mind-boggling. It's hard to put any words into a sensible situation. We all want to come on here or say something profound to wake people up, like the Gettysburg Address.
Right.
But when we've got some electronic device from a, wherever it's from, on the conversation of missing plane, Chris Christopherson did a movie years ago. It's also a movie with a company called Free Jack with Emilio Estevez and Mick Jagger, where they snagged Emilio Estevez out of a accident in a race car and shipped him back and forth in time. Same thing was with the movie with Christopherson. Watch the movie. I can't remember the name of it. It's from the late 70s, maybe early 80s. That's still available. The technology that this gentleman is talking about, and once again, the words, how do you describe the words of a government or any entity that wants to hide that kind of information or technology or keep it to themselves? All knowledge is transcendent.
This is transcendent.
And if you look at that technology, it's what Admiral Byrd ran into when they sent a fleet down there, and something spanked his butt and sent him home. Something spanked a fleet on the ass and sent that man home. And we just kind of throw that out of the window, like, huh, what? Okay, so he came home and blah, blah, blah. Now, that is either what? We don't know.
I get exactly what you're saying. You know, what your calls made me think of, especially in terms of like movies being a very useful tool in expressing this stuff. I can show that video of Yuval Noah Harari to a lot of people. It won't sink in. But how effective would it be to have a movie where it's just portrayed in its true evilness what's going on? You know, like a James Bond movie where Yuval Noah Harari is the bad guy. Like really explaining just how sick this is and watching somebody go through the process of like having their brain chip. Those are the types of movies that should be made by our side. Things that get people to understand at an emotional level, at an empathetic level, what it's like to be victims of these people. Hey, thanks for being here with us, folks. I'll be on the Alex Jones Show at 1 p.m. today. Tune in.